Staying on Ange, was it the right decision to sack him?
Yes.
Welcome back to another episode of the Block 44 podcast. Today we are joined by Cherries fan, Andy. Thank you very much for coming, Andy.
No problem.
The first question is, I know we've had a good chat about this recently as well. How long will Ange Postecoglou last at Nottingham Forest?
We're now going to pause for a brief moment of silence for Ange Postecoglou as we filmed this during the international break whilst he was still the manager of Nottingham Forest. So we're going to go straight to the next question now because obviously he is no longer there. So this part is totally irrelevant.
Staying on Ange, because I know you have some family affinity with Spurs as well.
Yeah.
Was it the right decision to sack him?
Yes. I think it was unfair. I think if you read between the lines with all those parties involved, that decision wasn't made after the end of the season. I think that was probably made with a couple of months to go before they even won that trophy.
Yeah.
I think the writing was on the wall, but the momentum was there, so they couldn't do anything. I think Spurs have ended up, from a club point of view, in a far better position with a manager that is different character, quiet, gets on with players, knows what he's doing, very straightforward. Whereas Ange, I think the problem with him, even with his kind of stuff to media, it was very negative, very dour, very coughing and looking at the floor. And, you know, Thomas Frank has just come in and is just a guy that's doing his work and there's no kind of side stuff.
Just comes in, gets the job done, doesn't he?
Yeah. And, you know, for them, they've got a squad that's big enough and good enough. They should be doing better.
Mm.
So I think they've started the season very well. I think from Tottenham's point of view, yeah, I think it will be a call that was, it was the right thing to do.
Do you think this year will be European football again for Spurs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe not Champions League, but there'll be
Europa League for sure.
Yeah, I think if you look at what Villa did, just being below that Champions League position, I think that's where Spurs will end up this year. But it's going to be, if you look at the likes of Newcastle up there, Chelsea turning it round, Arsenal being in their city, Liverpool, Champions League's tough.
Yeah,
Champions it's hard to League get into. Is really difficult.
But I mean, even just being up, that'll be a good turnaround for them because you can go on the other side of things and look at how United are doing now, even still this season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think out the two of them, I think Spurs have got a much better chance of spending more time in the top half of the table than United have.
Definitely.
They've turned a corner, I think.
Do you think Amorim as well? Do you think he's going to last long at United? Or do you think he's next after Ange to probably vacate his hot seat?
I hope he stays because we've got a certain manager here that will be instantly
first in line for that. Yeah,
to take it up, booking taxis to Manchester from Bournemouth and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think that the problems at United are bigger than just one man, and Amorim has come in and unfortunately he's made the same mistake that Ange has made, and he's made the same mistake that Russell Martin has made, which is this mile my
too stubborn.
I'm not you can't do that.
No, in this league you have to adapt, don't you? You can't do it any other way.
There is a way of doing it, and City did it where you just buy a whole group of best players and then go, we play this way.
You
can get away with it when you spent the money and you've got the quality. You can't do that. You can't do that any other way.
No, and you can't even spend the money to do that anymore either, can you?
No, it's true.
Which is a very good thing in a way, really, because it stops people doing what City did and it gets you to climb it slower.
Yeah.
Although it does have its own problems. But going on to the topic of Iraola, would he take that United seat if he came up?
No.
Would it be worth it?
No, I don't think so. I think he's got, you know, the club here at the moment is just in a sweet spot.
Mm.
You know, we've got good players, good manager, got training ground, the stadium plans are underway, results are coming in. I wouldn't trade that for anything more than going to the best of the best.
Yeah.
And remember that Areola is, obviously he's got Spanish roots, so there's nothing to say that a Real Madrid or a Barcelona wouldn't come in.
Yeah.
So it doesn't necessarily mean he would move to a Premier League club, but Man City, Pep won't last forever. That could
He's talking about going within the next few years, isn't he? Yeah. Yeah, so probably be quite a good job for him.
I think you have to be realistic. You know, we can't have a manager here that keeps ripping up trees year on year out without some kind of interest.
Yeah.
But I think, he won't jump ship. He'll wait. Mm. And then there will be a time where an opportunity comes along that's just too good.
Yeah.
And then he'll walk away from this place and everyone will go, well, thank you, you've done your time and whatever. I think for Bournemouth in that equation, their challenge is then, where do you go next? And I think they're probably in a better position now than they've ever been to go, this as a proposition is far more appealing to a good, you know, established manager definitely. Than it's ever been.
Yeah.
So you can't, I don't think you can put all your eggs in one basket and go, well, the success we have is down to Areola. It is, but there are other elements, and you just hope that those other elements allow the next person to come in to pick it up and carry on that momentum.
Yeah. Yeah, because no matter who comes in next, they'll have, well, everything's been redone, new training ground.
Yep.
But the most important thing is they'll have money to spend.
Yes.
Because what Semenya's being rumoured at 100 million in Jan, I mean, that's quite a sum, really, isn't it?
It is. And you've, you know, I always, where we are now and what we're doing with our players is where you need to look at Brighton and respect what they've done.
Mm.
Is they never fear losing a player. You just make sure you get the right price and then you reinvest.
Mm.
And it's those links to the reinvestment and the recruitment that's key. So if someone does offer 100 million in January, I'm sure the club will go, okay.
Yeah, it'd be silly not to really, wouldn't it? So obviously you could wait out until the summer. And I mean, so many might even want to, because if you're pushing for European football, I mean, unless it's, I mean, it would be a top club that comes in for it, but unless they're obviously going to win something big this season, that it'd be pointless leaving for the summer.
And you have to, it's all right, this speculation and the money, but you've got to look at, if it's Liverpool, do Liverpool really want to spend another 100 million? Newcastle spend another 100 million. Would City really want to spend? So it's all right courting these transfers, but the money's still got to be there and on the table for the deal to be done. So we'll see. But it's no different. It's no different than Semenya or Evan Ilson or Alexander Isak.
Yeah.
That proves that there are very few clubs in the league who have a protected status in terms of people coming in for the players.
Yeah.
And I think if you can take that on board and work out what your strategy is going to be and not fear losing one player or another player, that's the way it's going to be sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I guess it is also having that strategy in place, because when you look at other clubs that have sold, well, not even sold big players, Bournemouth have taken more money off Real Madrid than the likes of Liverpool and PSG, and they've taken Kylian Mbappe and Trent Alexander-Arnold for free, and whilst taking Dean Howson for 50-odd million.
Yeah.
So it is just having that plan in place, isn't it?
Because and I guess that once you get that strategy, you then get that reputation that if you're a young, hungry player in Europe and you're doing really well, come here for 2 years and you'll get your big move.
Yeah.
But in your 2 years here, you'll probably play and you'll get your experience and your knowledge. And I guess at the moment, there's a thing that, if you can cut your teeth in the Premier League, you can play anywhere.
Yeah, definitely.
So if you can come here and do well for a couple of years, right, you're in the shop window for anyone around Europe. And, you know, you look at the three players we lost over the summer. We've lost one to the current Premier League champions, one to the European champions, and then one to Real Madrid. Well, realistically.
You can't really say no to those offers, can you?
You can't.
I mean, Bournemouth's great and the South Coast is lovely, but when they come calling.
They're not going to hang around in Bournemouth just because Bournemouth's got a good beach.
No.
It's just not going to happen.
No, it's not worth it just for that, is it?
Yeah.
No, but I mean, the reality for Bournemouth now is that, yes, it can come for 2 years, but also to the fact of European footballers on the cards, because there is no reason why now, because Europa League may, because it is tough at the top of the table now, but there's no reason why Conference League, and if Bournemouth get into the Conference League, that's the best one, because that's the one that they could actually win.
I've always had a it's a great thing to aspire to, but the reality of then playing Saturday, Thursday,
it's a lot,
it's hard work. And you know, certain clubs have done it well, but it'd be interesting this year seeing how the likes of Crystal Palace cope with it, but they've not coped with it before. And it's great getting there and being in the Conference League, but suddenly you realise that you're six places below where you were in the league last year, and it's tough. And this place, are they ready? Probably not far off, but it's it is a double-edged sword.
I guess it's just a bit of squad depth now, really, isn't it? Because it's easy for the big boys when you've got When you look at Liverpool, they've got £200 million strikers that they can just whip on and off the pitch whenever they fancy.
And I think there's a bit of a history there that clubs have shown that actually getting motivated for a European game is fine. It's the following game, the following weekend, where you've got the tiredness, everyone's been away all week.
Yeah, because it's a travel as well. It takes a toll.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah, definitely.
But speaking about a club that was in that position that has fallen quite quickly, is West Ham. So obviously Nuno's there now.
Yeah.
And he's making some statements. I think they'll do well, but what are your thoughts with them? Can he get them back to their former glory of
I think
Conference League football?
As we've touched on already, he has a style of play that's worked at Wolves, it's worked at Forest, and it will probably work at West Ham. I think West Ham, Graham Potter should have worked, it didn't.
Yeah.
They never ended up with a style under him or a way of playing. It was... it just didn't work. So Nuno comes in. That's the way we're going to play. Mm. That's it. That, you know, and it's, as you said, it's a defensive way of playing. So it should be one that they can at least put the brakes on bad results quite quickly.
Yeah.
Stabilise things and then move on. I think the problem with that type of style is when you then get success, you don't want to play defensively anymore. You want to buy good players and play them. You're going away from the kind of model. So I think for West Ham, I think it's a good move. It gives them a definitive way of playing. They're not going to, I don't know, going to win anything or rip up any trees, but I think most West Ham fans will go, let's just move
just
away
the
from
League,
that.
Isn't it? Yeah, just get away from the
relegation
zone.
Get in the middle and let's, you know, let others worry about that. So... it depends how you measure success, but I think success this year is just moving away.
Yeah.
Just getting into that pattern.
Yeah, it's got to be, isn't it? Just move away from where you are now and actually get out of contention that you could go down this season.
Definitely.
But with his style of play, it's very counter-attacking football.
Yeah.
The most interesting choice it looks like he's made so far is freezing out James Ward-Prowse the very first time. Because, I mean, I know I'm biased as a Saints fan, but when you look at the stats from last season, and even this season, he's been a solid starter, vice club captain, and he is their most creative player.
Yeah, he went to West Ham, leaving Southampton to find that sweet spot and play in the Premier League. It didn't really happen. He then moved to Forest. Unfortunately for him, the manager that didn't really want him at Forest now doesn't really want him at West Ham.
Yeah.
He needs to find, and quickly, because age for him is a thing as well.
Big factor,
he's
he's not getting younger. Anymore.
He needs to find somewhere that loves him.
James Ward-Prowse back to St Mary's.
Possibly. he needs just anywhere that loves him, gives him that role, gives him the responsibility, lets him get on with his game. Yeah. It's not going to be West Ham, but there are plenty of other clubs that he would fit and work when he's a good enough player.
Yeah,
he's just gone missing.
He has. He's a fantastic player. I think it's a shame as well, because when he first signed for West Ham, he went there so he could play for England. He went there... I think statistically he was the most creative midfielder in the first half of the season, his first season in West Ham.
Yeah.
But Southgate still didn't pick him over his favourite, so it just didn't work out for him and what he wanted to do. But let's stay on England. Obviously, we just finished the international break. England beat Latvia last night and have now qualified for the World Cup.
Yeah.
Can Tuchel bring it home?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Why not? I international football is very difficult, isn't it? Because whatever manager you are, you're not really a manager. You're just kind of a statesman for looking after a collection of the best of the cream of the crop of that country. So you've got a job where you have to bring this group together for a two-month period and be successful. I think, unlike other managers, Tuchel, again, has got quite a direct style.
Mm.
I don't think it's going to be a style that's going to be very difficult for others to pick up on. It's 50-50 at the moment, isn't it? Because yes, he's qualified from the group, so you've got to give him that, and you've got to give him credit for that, and he's done it with not really too much fuss, and the performances have been okay.
He's kept a clean sheet. He hasn't conceded a goal yet for the at all in the qualifiers, has he?
And in the last two or three games they've started scoring goals as well, so the signs there are good. But then again, you would have expected most managers to be able to go in and get that team and group to qualify out the into the World Cup. So I think he's just bought himself time now, and I think we have to give him that time, and we have to judge him when we get to the
it'll take a couple of competitions for him to before any decisions can really be made, kind of. Yeah, you can't just do 1 Euros and be like,
the only thing I would say about him, and looking back through his kind of history, is that he does seem to have a reputation of being a man that you either love or hate. He's a bit kind of Marmite.
Yeah,
he's a bit awkward. Even when he's interviewed, you've got that kind of...
It's quite cold and frosty.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah, you never know what you're going to get.
So we'll see, but he's doing all right. Just kind of, you've got to let it go, and you've got to let it.
But also a big statement leaving out Bellingham, Foden. I mean, yes. I know he left out Grealish as well because he hasn't been good in the past, but he's had a fantastic start to the season as well.
Yeah, and difficult ones to call because we don't know the conversations and we don't know fitness-wise. And I think Grealish is different out of those three because, again, let's go back to James Ward-Prowse situation. Mm. That's where Grealish was 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And he's moved and he's found his sweet spot and he's found the club that wants him and wants him to play and a manager that loves him.
Yeah.
Suddenly he's back on course. That's a great kind of analogy to where James Ward-Prowse is. But he's on the rise, so I'm not surprised he's not in the squad.
Yeah.
Give him time, give him a season. Injuries elsewhere, he's there. We all know what Jack Grealish would do. There's no...
We all know he's capable of, don't we?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Phil Foden, it seems to... maybe not paying him too much attention, but his form seems to have...
It has been a bit disappointing as of late.
Yeah, he's not quite the headliner.
No, he's not in the papers all the time anymore.
And I think he suffers from being a great player, but has just never lit up England as much as he's done City for whatever reason.
Yeah.
He's just not kind of fulfilled that sort of dream role.
It's just a lot of big personalities there, though, isn't it? You've got some top players that play for top clubs, all competing for the same titles at different places.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's probably internal rivalries as well and big egos to try and calm down.
And I think if you're going to go on the ego, Bellingham is probably the one that you go, he'd be the one with the biggest ego because of where he plays and why not?
Won a Champions League at 21 years of age,
exactly,
and being the main man.
And again, Bellingham, I think, is different because he's come back from injury. He's not played many 90 minutes, if any, for Real Madrid. So there is a fitness thing there as well. But to cut them from the squad seems a little bit harsh.
Yeah.
If there is a little bit of, well, actually, this is my squad, and if you're not in, you're not in. It's up to you to get yourself
back in, maybe.
And I could see that with Tuchel. But I guess looking at a slightly different aspect, we always tend to criticise England because we get to a tournament and go, well, we've not given others a chance.
Yeah.
So how can we have a big squad? So actually, Tuchel's done that.
Mm.
So again, you can't really criticise. Would I want Bellingham and Foden and Grealish in our squad for the main tournament? Yeah, absolutely. But if there's others that have come in, Morgan Rodgers.
Yes. Yeah, well, I suppose he got the call up after their start of the season. But, I mean, it worked. Worked wonders, didn't it? Because he's got...
So the biggest issue will come when the managers has to call the squad.
Yeah.
And he's played Morgan Rodgers and he's done really well. And a few others have got the chance. And suddenly you've got Bellingham sat there going, right, well, I haven't got room for them all. But that's what a great place to be.
It is. Like, I guess he is making that statement as well. Because with Southgate, it was very much just, you're in.
Yeah.
Whereas Tuchel's, even for the big names, you don't impress me, you're out.
Yeah. And I guess there's another aspect there is that we always go on about wanting an England manager. But the nice thing about Thomas Tuchel not being English and not having any affiliation to English, he just doesn't care.
Yeah, he's just there to win.
I just want to win. So if you're not doing it, you're out.
Mm.
And then when you're out, it's up to you to get back again because I don't care. Is that kind of...
Yeah.
There is a bluntness about that that might actually work.
Yeah, I think it's exactly what England need. They need that ruthless cutthroat.
They do.
Just
they do.
Get out there and do your thing and win those games because... They are arguably the best team, best international team in the world.
If, as we've just talked about, if you look at that squad and you look at the likes of Foden and Bellingham and will they or won't they play, that tells you the squad's in a good place. Harry Kane up front and it should be doing...
it should be better than it has been doing. Yeah,
definitely.
It definitely should
and
be.
And, you know, you've got the likes of Declan Rice now affirming himself as a proper full-on international player, and we shouldn't be struggling. We should be going in there full of confidence and just going, well, yeah, let's do it.
Mm. Well, I mean, we should be going to everyone as favourites, really, shouldn't we? And getting at least to... I mean, I know we've done a few finals, but we just can't put that final ball in the back of the net.
No.
which is just what they need. But let's go... So let's move past international football, because in all honesty, it bores me. I'm not a huge fan of the international break.
I agree.
But going back to the Premier League, who's going to win the league this season? Because obviously Liverpool are showing cracks.
Yeah.
But then again, can Arsenal... Because Arsenal get up there, but they always just seem to stay just behind whoever is there, no matter what the points actually are.
So I've been through this conversation at work. So my boss is a season ticket holder at the Emirates.
Oh, is he?
So we've had this conversation.
Yeah, I bet.
And we do a fantasy league at work.
Yeah.
So we were sat there doing it together. And I went for Arsenal to win the league, partly because my boss was sat there and partly because I thought, well, you know, maybe it's time.
Yeah.
From what I've seen this year, like you say, there's a few little wobbles with Liverpool. Mm. I don't think Chelsea are there or thereabouts. City are on the kind of... They're getting back to where they were, but they're not quite there yet. There's something about Arsenal so far this year where they're winning even when they're not playing well.
Yeah.
They're finding ways to win. And I saw a great stat. It was on Match of the Day. and it was after one of the Arsenal victories. And they did a comparison to their subs bench last season, which was a number of players that you didn't really know weren't quite good enough.
Yeah, not a huge
to the subs
depth.
Bench this season. And you look at it and go,
it's strong.
Wow.
Yeah.
Blimey. Eze isn't playing every game. Zubimendi is not playing every game. And, you know, Arsenal got those two fantastic centre-backs.
Yeah, Gabriel and Saliba. Yeah, they are awesome, aren't they? They're
I good. Think if they can keep it going, so... I was massively disappointed at the back end of last season where they just faded towards the end of the season. And they were just like, where are you now? Where, you know, where's the team?
I guess it was that depth really, wasn't it?
It is. And you've got the likes of now, the likes of Martinelli, Trossard are on the bench. Whereas go back to last season, those players were having to play.
Started every game.
You know, Saka's been out at the start of this year. When he dropped out last year, it was a disaster.
It's a nightmare. Yeah, but now they've got the depth to fix it.
Yeah.
But I guess that's the thing with them, isn't it? Because they got to... Was it semis or quarters they got to the Champions League? Whatever
yes,
it was. They got really far.
Yeah, they beat Real Madrid. What was the game they Declan Rice scored a couple of...
Yes, it was Real Madrid. Yeah. Those two free kicks. Yeah, because it was PSG that they lost to in
that's
the end,
right.
wasn't it?
Yes,
yeah.
it was.
And then obviously they went on to win it.
And I actually think... There was question marks about one of their signs, but I actually think it could work really well. It's Madueke.
Yes.
It just looks. You suddenly go, ooh, I now understand why.
He looks really good. Yeah. At the start, when they first signed him, I thought, what on earth are you doing?
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, at Chelsea, I wouldn't touch him with that 10-foot barge, but I'd ship him off somewhere else.
I guess that's what's bought them the not to worry about Saka. Because Madueke's come in,
they've
just bought down that time. You're not wanting to rely on one player too much, which I think they were last year.
Yeah, well, it's always interesting to see, though, isn't it? Because obviously, from a fan's perspective, it shows where the scouts actually make their money. Because from us watching people like Madueke, you think, not a chance. But
yeah, exactly.
They do make it in. They are good. But obviously, going on to... So, Eze is now gone to Arsenal. Yeah. Crystal Palace are slowly losing players, but they're showing no sign of slowing down anytime soon.
Yep.
What do you? How far do you think they can go on the Glasgow, and how long do you actually think they can keep him? Because obviously Gakey's banging on the door of Liverpool, and that could happen. Well, probably will happen in Jan.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's won again. It's like Areola here. Glasner started slowly, but has built. And I mean, what a job he's doing. What a job. They have to adapt, like Brighton and Bournemouth, that they will lose players, and you just have to carry on, and you have to take the money and reinvest. I think there's a great point, and if you've listened to Unai Emery and Eddie Howe being interviewed, that there is, I think, now a ceiling where clubs, because of financial fair play, can invest so much but to actually make that final step to get into that top four and be in the Champions League is actually now really difficult.
Yeah.
Really difficult. Palace, I think it's really nice that you can put Palace into the same bracket as Brighton, Bournemouth, Fulham, maybe, yeah, where we are slightly behind the leading pack, but we're
close
on their coattails. And I think out of that group, there'll always be one that takes that step
that
further in
sixth spot
or seventh,
yeah,
and grabs one of those European spots. But I think, you know, success for Bournemouth and success for Brighton and success for Palace is getting in that 8th, 9th, 10th position and consistently staying there, mm, and having that business model to keep it going. Glasner's doing a great job.
Yeah, he is.
I mean, the cup final last year,
yeah,
I actually watched it and thought, do you know what? Good on him.
Good squad.
Yeah,
yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, they've done well.
But they're in the same spot as Bournemouth, where if United do come knocking, maybe.
Yeah, and it's again, still got a big pull as a club, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, Glasner has, he has background and experience in Europe.
Yeah.
So it won't just be from the Premier League. There will be German teams and Spanish teams that I'm sure going.
Yeah, he'll have a good selection, yeah, to choose from when that time does come.
Definitely.
But it will be really interesting to see. Do you reckon they can go for European? Who do you think will be the European spots this season? So obviously you've got your top four, but excluding that, who do you reckon is going to get those Europeans, like Europa League and Conference League spots?
So it's, as we said, you've got too many teams for the Champions League spots.
Yeah.
So you've got Newcastle, Chelsea, Arsenal, Liverpool, City, Tottenham, maybe. Mm-hmm. So some of those teams aren't going to make the Champions League. So if Tottenham don't make the Champions League, it's a good chance they're going to pick up one of the other spots, which just,
yeah,
makes it more difficult for the likes of Bournemouth and Brighton, all those type of teams. Villa?
Yes.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
There's something that's not...
Hasn't clicked this season, has it?
Not clicked this season. So I'm not sure. I would probably go for, if you're looking for Europa League and Conference League, I'd probably go Tottenham, Newcastle.
Yeah.
To fill one of those spots, and maybe one of the Bournemouths or Brightons just to sneak in.
Yeah, I think one of that lot can definitely get,
yeah,
the Conference League spot. So I think that will be up for grabs for a team like Bournemouth, Fulham.
Yeah.
Not for us anymore, but Palace and,
yeah,
and the likes of those.
And I guess, as we've said before, you've got to have the squad.
Yeah,
and I think
definitely.
Probably Newcastle and Tottenham have got squads that are more akin to, mm-hmm, getting into Europe and getting in again and getting in again. So, yeah, I think Champions League is going to be massively difficult to get in this year. And I think that the other European spots, probably more than ever, are, mm-hmm, going to be difficult to get into as well.
Yeah, no, I agree. But the other thing that I do like about how this is all working is the fact that smaller teams are winning the likes of the Carabao Cup and Newcastle last year. Obviously, they're not,
yeah,
a small team.
That's true.
And Crystal Palace with, yeah, the FA Cup. It's better to see that coming through. Obviously, we want to see more lower down teams. It'd be nice to see a championship team get to, yeah, a final or something. Like, just see a bit more competitiveness from lower down. But it's nice to see that it's not just the big boys doing it every time now.
Definitely. Definitely.
When these managers start getting sacked, how much chaos do you think it's going to cause? Because obviously right now we have Ange, we have Amorim,
yeah,
who sort of banging on the door to be sacked,
yeah,
but then you've got the likes of Iraola, Glasner and some other top managers around that could then take those spots,
yeah.
How much of a knock-on effect do you think just one sacking will have on the rest of the league?
Good question. I think in terms of the clubs that they leave, I think the likes of, we've talked about business models, the likes of Bournemouth, Brighton, Palace, they're stable. I think they'll cope with it.
Mm.
A really good example of that, and one that surprised me, is actually Brentford.
Yes.
Because I think after the loss of Thomas Frank and losing a couple of really good players, I really worried for them. But actually, you know, the guy's gone in there,
mm,
stabilised it, they've got a few wins. I think it's a different story when you talk about Forest, they've just got an owner that's so, he's going to punch, fight, kick.
Yeah.
He's going to get there.
Yeah.
But he will take prisoners. And even going back to the Gibbs-White transfer that never happened, there was,
yes,
elements,
yeah,
of that which were a little bit, it's almost like,
bit mafia like him.
Exactly, yeah. It's almost like you're not leaving.
Yeah.
All right, boss.
It looked like, yeah, it was like he was forced to say, because they triggered the release clause, then they threatened legal action because no one's supposed to know about the release clause, and then he's suddenly best friend shaking Marinaki's hand on the pitch.
So I think the connotations, the repercussions for Forest will be quite dramatic. United, I just don't know. I think that's a puzzle that I'm not sure what the answer is.
Yeah.
Sack Amorim and you bring someone else in. Is everything going to change?
No.
Well, the formation might change.
It's a big project, though, isn't it?
Change, but I mean, the,
done
you've
that
got
a few times.
And Wemo, that when they're doing the summer.
Yeah.
Sesko. Oh.
Got some top players there.
Like Tottenham, they should be doing better. So maybe it is down to the manager. Maybe a manager change would just allow a certain amount of improvement and take away the negativity. But
I think it must stem higher up than that now, though, because to go this far through this many managers, through this many players, and to see nothing, it's just got to be such a toxic atmosphere just from the top down, really.
I agree, and I think that Sir Jim Ratcliffe's gone in there and made some tough decisions. I'm not sure they're all right.
Yeah.
I think a little bit of the soul and the heart of the club has been lost, but maybe that was needed. Maybe it needed that kind of business approach to it. But it's a tough one. But the knock-on effect, I guess that would be, it, you know, is United a big enough draw?
Yeah.
So would he tempt Iriola? Would he tempt a Glasner? I'm not sure. Not until Man United can pull their socks up.
Yeah, it's a tough choice, because right now it's a bit of a graveyard more than anything else. Like you go there and your career dies until you leave to go somewhere else.
Yeah. Do you go from your tried and tested, your place where you've got plenty of money in the bank and credit in the bank, and you've got boards and recruitment teams that are backing you? Do you go into the hornet's nest?
Mm.
Because that hornet's nest, you might be in the same position that Amorim is in 12 months' time. You're out with a damaged reputation, and who knows?
Yeah,
tough call. If they give me the call, I'll take it.
yeah, I'm pretty sure would. You probably do a better job. Yeah. All you've got to do is adapt to a few different things, and I'm sure you'd be absolutely fine.
Yeah, I'll do it for less money as well.
Yeah. Oh, I wouldn't judge this as much. Lose all your hair by the end of that job.
Fair enough.
That'd be stressful. But right, so we've got one more question, and then we'll wrap up. So it was a couple of weeks ago now, but did Mo Salah deserve the Ballon d'Or? Obviously, it went to Ousmane Dembele. Ooh. They won. PSG won pretty much everything.
Yep.
But Salah did have an incredible season.
Yeah. Yeah.
And won the Premier League as well.
Yeah, I think he probably did, to be honest. I'm not sure, he started this season quite
He didn't start this season.
But then
again,
Liverpool haven't started quite as well, and we're early doors. I think he probably did. Mm. I think he probably did. I think, you know, the likes of Kane will feel unfortunate not to get it. Man City's number one striker. I think he
was unlucky, especially in 2023 when he got 50 goals.
Yeah,
yeah.
And he's just a machine.
Yeah,
he
will win it at some point.
Yeah. So 100%. I'm actually quite glad now that the likes of Ronaldo and Messi are out of the way, because
it's an obvious choice. Just leave some room now, because when it was out, it was just which one of those two will get it. Yeah. No one else was ever in contention.
And I guess the fallback after that is just to always look at Mbappe. Well, he'll win it. Yeah. So, yeah, I think Salah probably did. And I think going back to this beginning of last season, we all know how good Salah is. I'm not sure there are many people that would have put him in a category of having the season that he had.
No.
I think he even outshone his own high standards.
Yeah.
And I think that was the surprise. So probably, I think he did deserve it.
Mm. Definitely. No, fair enough. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Andy.
No problem.
That was very kind of you to pop along. And thank you, everyone, for watching as well. And we'll see you all in a few weeks for the next episode of the Block 44 podcast.